talking Atlanta sports at night.
It's Chris Thomas tonight. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back with you here on 92.9 The Game. Taking your calls 404-726-0929 on the Falcons. 3-7. Penix out. Drake out. Zach Harrison out. Billy Bowman out. Can this coaching staff and this GM staff do anything over these last seven games, in your opinion, to save their behinds? Or is this thing, as they like to say, the cliche, a fait accompli, meaning it's already over? The destination is predetermined that the Falcons will be having at least a handful of new coaches next season and beyond. 404-726-0929 had great calls so far, so let's keep it going with Jeff in College Park. Jeff, what do you think?
Hey, Chris, thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I definitely think there are going to be changes made. I hate to say this. I heard you talking about, you know, not really blaming Arthur Blank because he puts people in charge to make the decisions. But the Falcons have been in need of an experienced head coach for years. We keep hiring these coaches that have little, you know, to no experience, and they're just not making calls. We would have won the Super Bowl with an experienced head coach. And so that's my frustration with Arthur Blank, is the coach hiring itself. And then with the GM, he's made some good calls, but I did question the Michael Penix pickup, not because Michael Penix is not a phenomenal quarterback, but because of his injury prone. And so, and I thought there were other quarterbacks, if you were going to go that route, that would have fit better. But, you know, they did what they did. So,
well, let me ask you this. What do you think about my suggestion of Mike McCarthy?
I like that. And I also like if Rex Ryan's available. I want somebody that's going to hold this team accountable. I know Rex Ryan, he's on ESPN. He flirts around coming back all the time. I'd like to see somebody here. Mike McCarthy, I like that. I just want an experienced head coach in here that's going to hold the players accountable and help us establish the will to win. That's what we lack. We've come close. And a lot of this has been play calling, but also has been execution. So if you're not executing, then you lack the will to win, in my opinion. And so we just need it doesn't have to be fire and brimstone. Look at Andy Reid. He's not yelling at players and getting in their face, but they respect him and they play for him. That's what we need. Somebody's players are going to respect, listen to. I wish we had a coach like Detroit has. I mean, somebody or even the Rams coach, somebody that can really instill the will to win in these players and hold them accountable. Because, you know, other than that, it's going to keep this same result we get year after year. Inexperience, trying this out, trying that out, and it is not working. So we definitely need to go to a different direction. I heard the other caller say that, you know, he thinks that these guys are coming back. I'm 50-50. I think, you know, I don't know what Arthur Blank's going to do. 50-50, he's going to bring these guys back, give them another chance. 50-50, he's going to let them all go. So, I mean, I want to see a new coach in here. That's my personal opinion.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thanks, Jeff, checking in from College Park. Good stuff. The reason I like McCarthy more than Ryan, one, McCarthy's done it a lot more recently. He had back-to-back-to-back 12-win seasons with the Cowboys just a couple of years ago. Rex Ryan hasn't been a head coach in the league in a long time. He had those couple of really good years with the Jets, and then he flamed out with the Bills, and he's been on TV ever since. But I understand from the personality standpoint. Also, McCarthy to me is just a little more stable. Rex could be high-strung, high-energy, and up and down and emotional, and I don't think the Falcons need that right now. I think they need a guy like McCarthy to come in if the change is made and as you were saying, steady the ship. 404-726-0929. Good stuff there from Jeff to lead us off. Jacob is in Midtown. Jacob, what do you think?
So I got two parts all about Penix. The first thing is that really Terry Fontenot put us in a situation where it's like we're not going to be quarterback hell, but realistically we're in coaching hell. Like, if you put that much investment behind Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix, you need to cut the coaching before you cut the quarterbacks. And right now, we got Kirk who's busted, and we got to, like, double down on Penix. On Penix, he's got to show it actually, like, what a first-round pick is. Right now, he's acting like he's, you know, a lot of his coaching, but he's just acting, like, very hesitant, everything like that. He needs to get that, like, down the field, stretch the field, make the good passes. And a lot of that comes back to coaching, but a lot of that's also mentality. Like, I'm going to go see Hans King right now. He doesn't need to be doing all that, but come on, man.
Well, also, just to be fair, and I appreciate the call, Haynes King does not have the injury history that Michael Penix Jr. had. I mean, this is the fifth season-ending injury in the last 8 years of his playing at quarterback. So you understand Haynes King is – Haynes King also understands he's – you know, there's a very good chance he's not going to be in the NFL. He might be in the NFL as a – maybe as a special teamer, or if they convert him to maybe an H-back or something like that. But Haynes King is not going to be playing quarterback in the NFL. Michael Penix Jr. has all the tools. So I understand the comparison, Jacob, but I don't necessarily agree because I think they're just two different styles. But Penix's hesitancy has caught up with him. We've seen it. Him, you know, he made that one big play for the 15-yard scramble, and we've all been like, dude, where's that been? And we didn't see it since, and then he wound up getting hurt anyway. So, unfortunately, Jacob, it's a moot point. 404-726-0929. Mark is in Peachtree Corners. Mark.
Hey, Toto. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm great, man. Thanks for checking in. What's up?
Okay. You know, I really think that part of this a lot is Raheem. I mean, not Raheem, but Arthur Blank, because, you know, when as Raheem has done consistently, you know, as an executive, as a leader of a team, or, you know, as a leader of a business, when you get up there and get questions asked of you, you don't just rattle off four or five questions super fast or statements super fast in response to it. You know, you take your time and analyze things, you know. And, you know, he had to see that, but it exudes a lack of confidence, you know. And I could see that from, like, almost the beginning, you know. And then, you know, he's brought Zach down to the field, and he doesn't – he still doesn't make in-game adjustments and doesn't seem as if he's communicating with him much, you know.
Yeah, and I appreciate the phone call. All that optic stuff just looks so much worse, and it sounds so much worse when you're losing like this. Like Raheem Morris, when the team is winning and the fast talking and the smooth talking and the, you know, the 100 miles an hour going, it sounds a lot better when you're winning. But when you're losing, to the caller's point, it sounds like you're just searching. It sounds like you're just trying not to trip over yourself and just get the answer out and keep it moving. And unfortunately, when you lose five in a row, and you start to repeat yourself over and over again, we got to clean it up, we got to get better, we got to dig deep, we got to soul search, and you hear that over and over and over again, week by week by week, it starts to get a little grating. And in terms of in-game coaching, it really doesn't seem like Raheem is involved in that much. Just watching him every game that I have, he's just sort of like the field general, just monitoring everything and sort of just, you know, going back and forth. But we don't know that. Just to be completely fair, we have no idea how many decisions he makes during any given game in terms of how much he's talking. But it certainly appears that he's more passive on game day and leaves the offensive and defensive play calling to the coaching staff. That's what it looks like. But we obviously don't know. We're not in the headsets. We're not listening. But, and again, that just looks a lot worse when you've lost five in a row. To the caller's point, Lee is in Jonesboro. Lee.
Turtle, what's going on?
What's up, Lee?
Hey, my take on it, I believe, you know, everybody's trying to put the blame on Terry Fontenot. Terry has brought some great players here. I think it's 70-30 coaching to player. The coaching has, that Robinson has called some plays that has worked. Our players hasn't stepped up. You got Moody dropping balls. You got Cal dropping balls. You got receivers running wrong plays. And I don't know. This year has just been wild for the Falcons. It's been up and down. I'm sure everybody else feels the same. I can't put my finger on it.
Well, Lee, I appreciate the call. It's a little bit of everything, right? It's all those things that you just said. It's coaching, it's injuries, it's lack of discipline, it's lack of talent in certain areas. There is no one thing that makes a season like this happen where everything just sort of crumbles beneath you. But I think the central thing of what it comes back to is coaching. There were ways to mitigate some of these losses that in-game decision-making and game planning we're not up to par. Where maybe you win two or three of these games that you lost and you're in a completely different position. But because you were either unprepared, couldn't make real-time adjustments, or weren't able to, you know, make a key stop or a key play on offense when you needed to, now is where you find yourself. 404-726-0929. Appreciate Lee checking in Jonesboro. Greg's in the ATL. Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you'd be talking about a 6-3 record if this team showed some intensity on special teams, because like two of the last three games they would have won if they didn't let the other team return the kickoff to the 50-yard line. Also, the play calling is ridiculously simplistic and predictable. And I don't understand where everyone is saying the wide receiving core is deficient. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there who can run a 4.6 40, and I don't understand. I think you have to blame the play calling for the inefficiency of the tight end and the other wide receivers. And the special teams coach needs to go, and the play caller needs to go, and they need to simplify the offense and just have some fun for these last seven games. Because I heard some guy on radio the other day on your network thinking they still have a playoff chance if they win 9 in a row. And that guy should not be able to hold himself out as a sports analyst. Well, if you think this team is going to win 9 in seven games.
No, listen, I appreciate
that's
it.
That's not happening.
No, you're
that's not happening.
It's not, and I appreciate the phone call. It's not happening. 404-726-0929. They're not going 7 in a row. It's just a matter of how much can this coaching staff prove, over these last seven games that they should stay. That's what it's about. Larry in the truck, finish us off. Larry.
Hey, Turtle, I appreciate you taking my call. Turtle, you and I agree on this, whether you will admit it or not. But it all comes down to the head coach. He's got to go, Turtle. You know that, and I know that. He's got to go. All these problems, when you're the head coach, all these problems are under your watchful eye. And you haven't done a good job. I'm sorry. You're probably a good person, and I like you, but you're over your head, Raheem. I'm sorry. We need a good coach, and I put it on him. I don't put anything on the kickers. We should have took care of that problem a long time ago. He should have. Quarterbacks, we should have. You know what I'm talking about. I believe you agree with me, but I appreciate your time.
No,
sir.
Larry, I appreciate it. Listen, it's hard to argue. He's below 20 games under 500 at this point for his coaching career. Just, you know, what is the Bill Parcells line? You are what your record says you are. It's hard to argue. I mean, what happened this year? I mean, I guess the Buffalo game, but that's one game out of 10 where you've been basically, you know, inept, at least in one or two phases of a three-phase game. Larry, it's hard to argue. All right, appreciate everybody that called. We'll take more of your calls later in the show. Coming up next, let's pivot for just a minute. Let's talk some baseball. Lindsey Crosby is going to join me of Braves today. Braves made some moves this week, a couple of them. What does it mean for the future of the roster, and what should we be prepared for this offseason? We'll talk to Lindsey next, then we'll get back into some more NFL and college football talk. Chris Thomas with you till 6:30.
Thomas.
And this is Chris Thomas Tonight.
They said he could have gone pro.
I'm talking local.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We will get back to the football conversation in just a couple of minutes, but I did want to talk a little Braves. They made a couple of moves this week that I was like, okay, I guess I get it, but let's get some more context as we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today. Make sure you check out that pod wherever you get your podcast. Lindsey, two-parter to start. Initial reaction when they brought back Iglesias, were you surprised? And secondarily, were you surprised at the number, 16 mil for 1 year?
So when they brought him back, the fact that he didn't get traded away at the trade deadline made me wonder if the plan all along was to bring him back. I did think it would have happened sooner than that, but the number, as much as I wanted it to be a little bit cheaper, it wasn't a pay raise over what he did last year. And there was at least one other offer on the table that we got reported that was for $16 million. So I would have liked it to be cheaper, but I think I understood when I saw somebody else offer the same money that that's just the cost of doing business for a veteran closer in this market. Ultimately, I think it's a good move. After the first half of the year, he was absolutely fantastic and has a streak right now of no blown saves since sometime in early August.
All right, so that leads to the next question is, how many more bullpen pieces, specifically late inning relievers, are they short right now?
It feels like you need at least two. And if you're not going to have Joe Jimenez, that number probably needs to be three. I wouldn't have thought that halfway through the season last year, but looking at the issues Dylan Lee had with home runs late, you're in a situation, if you don't have Joe Jimenez, your setup man is Dylan Lee and Aaron Bummer. You've got two lefties. You don't really have a righty that you would trust. I think it's at least two pieces. If you don't have Joe Jimenez, which you find out in late January, if you'll have him, I think you add a third.
So the only issue I had with the move was the price tag, because it feels like to me, like you said, his first half was so shaky. It was really interesting. It's one of the craziest seasons you'll ever see in terms of first and second half splits. But with the amount of needs that you just described in the bullpen, I'm wondering, like, if they offered him, I don't know, 12, would he have stayed, or you think he would have bolted to the Dodgers?
I think you could have offered him $12 million and gotten a decision in late December or early January. This move really kind of felt like Alex Anthopoulos is still trying to figure out exactly where all of his dollars are going to go. And he paid a couple million extra now to know how much it costs to take care of the ninth inning. And now he can work everything else and every other angle with that cost certainty. That's kind of what it felt like to me. I do think ultimately you probably, from what Anthopoulos told us in the media press conference that we did after the signing, Iglesias wanted to be here. He likes the clubhouse and everything. Could you have gotten a couple million off the price by banking on that familiarity? Probably. But I do think the time it would have taken before he made the decision is why they went ahead and just paid the 16 and didn't worry about it.
And the reason I use that number or ballpark of that number is, for instance, the Yankees just signed a guy in Ryan Yarbrough for $2.5 million. That's a versatile, valuable piece that if you have a couple of extra million dollars, Lindsay, that you could bring in.
Yeah, it feels like this $16 million versus a 12 is really going to come up when we see some of the contracts that guys sign in early February, as pitchers and catchers are reporting. That deal being so early for so little feels like there's an existing relationship there. But I do think that reliever late in the offseason, beginning of spring training, that's a deal that you see all the time where guys take less money than you expected. And I agree with you that you're going to have a couple guys that sign for $3 or $4 million. And we're thinking, well, why couldn't we do that? And Iglesias is going to be the reason why.
All right, so the other move that they make is, we're talking with Lindsey Crosby. Make sure you check out Braves Today, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube. Mauricio Dubon, trade him straight up for Nick Allen. He's not your starting shortstop, right?
From talking to Alex Anthopoulos on, was it Wednesday night, whatever it was, Tuesday night, it felt to me like he is still trying to get a shortstop. And Mauricio Dubon does two things for you in that regard. One, he gives you leverage in negotiations because you can point to another option on the roster and say, I don't have to sign Ha-Seong Kim for the price you want me to sign him for. I've got a guy I'm comfortable in. The organization had publicly come out and said they needed to upgrade off of Nick Allen, so he didn't give you that leverage. But I think the other reason why you're going to get a shortstop is, in the last two seasons, you've had to use defensive replacements and backups, injury backups, at every position on the field but first base. And Mauricio Dubon's value is the fact that he can play every single one of those positions but catcher at above average level. If you stick him as a starting shortstop, sure, he could play it defensively at an above average level, but the value he creates is not having to go get a Jared Kelnick to play left field or center field, or not having to get a Gio Urshela for third. So they're going to sign a shortstop because it doesn't make sense to put a full-time utility guy into the shortstop role. You lose the value of him being a utility guy.
Yeah, and he's a two-time Gold Glove winner at that utility spot. So obviously that's the height of his value there, as you just said. Okay, so outside of Bo Bichette and Kim that you mentioned, is there any other logical option out there? Is there a guy that could be had for a trade, maybe like an Ezekiel Tobar? Is that an option?
I was about to say, some of the, if it's not a free agent for Kim, or if they play in the Bichette market, you're really looking at a trade. Ezekiel Tobar is one of the names that comes up, simply because a lot of oftentimes when you replace GMs like Colorado has, they typically want to start fresh with a clean financial slate. He's also very close to Ronald Acuña Jr. So doesn't really play into the team's decision-making, but it definitely helps the player acclimate. There's been talk that the Washington Nationals under Paul Toboni may look to move both Mackenzie Gore and CJ Abrams. I think him being a local kid from Atlanta, 38% of all his career errors are against the Braves. I'm assuming that's because he just wants to play for them so bad. We'll see what happens, but they might be able to mitigate the defensive questions there. It's probably going to have to be a trade if you don't sign Kim, simply because nobody else on the market is starter quality. They're all either defensive specialists or guys that can hit but can't defend very well.
More outfield depth is needed. Maybe an extra guy that could play DH. Would the Braves and Mets engage on maybe a Brandon Nimmo discussion?
I've seen people talk about maybe a Brandon Nimmo deal or a Jeff McNeil deal. That's one I want to stay away from because of the injury. Knowing that the Braves are looking for a starter, knowing that the Braves would want another bat, I do think there's a conversation that could be had with David Stearns for something like a Kodai Senga and a Nimmo, Jeff McNeil. Maybe they throw in Luis Angel Acuña, Ronald's little brother, into the deal as he's out of options. David Stearns has made trades within his own division before, and he's made significant ones when he was with the Brewers. He hasn't really done it with the Mets. Does Steve Cohen let him make a trade of an everyday starter in the division? And then the issue with Nimmo is he does have a full no trade clause. So you have to get him to approve the deal.
All right. So let's save the best for last year, as we're talking with our good buddy, Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today. And that is, of course, the starting pitching situation here with the Braves. They obviously need another, I don't want to use the word marquee. I feel like they have that in Chris Sale. And if Spencer Strider gets back to his form, and we'll see what Hurston Waldrop can give. So they definitely have, you know, the majority of the front end figured out, but a solid 2B, 3A type guy. What do you think is the best and most logical option? We know they're not going to give a guy, you know, a $200 million contract, but would they wade into the waters of a Dylan Cease?
I think Dylan Cease is probably the only one of those qualifying offer marquee pitchers they would be willing to sign. AA's been on the record as trying to trade for Dylan Cease before. And so, you know, he's a local kid as well. There is that. Outside of that, it really feels like if you sign a guy, he's going to be more of a three or a four, like a Chris Bassett. Whereas if you make a trade, that's a place where you can see the Braves acquire a guy that they think is a two or a three, like a Pablo Lopez from the Twins. So between shortstop, a big bat, and starting pitcher, I feel like something's going to get filled via trade. And that's probably the only way the money works for Atlanta. If you can fill two of those via trade for somewhat affordably, maybe you have the money to go after a Cease. But the problem is you can't do all three in free agency. The money's just not there without getting too high into the CBT and getting the draft pick penalties. And I think that's the issue Atlanta's faced this winter, is AA's got to get some deals done.
What's the latest on Grant Holmes? I know he's trying to avoid surgery, but is the prognosis looking right now that he'll be ready to start the season?
Yeah, so we asked Alex Infalbus about that this week, and he said that Grant's the velocity is where it was last year before he got hurt. He's been able to do, you know, up-downs multiple innings at a time in the bullpen. Everything looks as good as can possibly be right now. They're going to reevaluate him when spring training starts and it's actual games, actual live action. But everything that they've seen says it's the best case scenario for him being able to rehab the injury and that he should be back without restriction next year, pending that final check at spring. But it looks like, knock on wood, he avoided the worst case scenario of needing elbow surgery.
All right. Before I let you go, where do you stand on Michael Harris right now?
I think he's an incredibly talented player that has a fundamental flaw in his ability in his swing decisions. And you saw by the fact that they tried to trade for Byron Buxton last year that the Braves are thinking we need a contingency plan. This is probably the final season where Michael Harris has the ability to be an everyday starter without fixing those major issues. Mauricio Dubon can play center field. I was already starting to wonder, if you have a shortstop, do you sit Harris against lefties and let Dubon play center? If he struggles again this year, they're probably going to find a way to either get a new center fielder and make him a backup or send him down or move on and send him somewhere else. It feels like this is his final chance to show that he can take that evolution as a hitter and stop chasing everything out of the zone.
Lindsey, great stuff. We'll be checking out the pod and we'll chat soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today. All right. When we get back, let's dive into a little college football conversation with some games going on today. Texas A&M, huge rebound game. But did they get exposed last week? Are they going to get exposed by the Longhorns coming up? Huge coaching decisions as well. We'll break it all down with Ian Valentino of A to Z Sports. That conversation comes your way next. And then back to the Falcons talk at the top of the hour as we're with you till Hawks pregame at 6:30 right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Welcome in our buddy Ian Valentino, A to Z Sports. Ian, Georgia over the last couple of weeks here. Listen, Ohio State's reigning champ and they're undefeated. So it's hard not to continue to give them their flowers, but with the way Georgia's playing right now, I think it's just about as well as anyone in the country. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've kind of redefined themselves just a little bit, right? Like coming into, I'd say, the middle part of the season, they were a good team. That much is obvious. But were they a great team? Were they a team that could come out and, like you said, compete with Ohio State and maybe even maybe like Texas A&M? I mean, I don't know how much you want to always buy into Texas A&M just considering their program history. But I don't know. It felt like there was a little bit of a gap there. And all of a sudden they come out, they dominate in the games that they need to against Texas. They definitely separate themselves in that game. Definitely look more physical, look more explosive. And maybe now we need to take them. I don't want to say we weren't taking them seriously at number 4 or 5 in the polls, but now it feels like maybe this is a big four. Maybe this is a little bit more competitive than what we thought. So I liked what I saw a lot. I thought that they not only took care, obviously, on the scoreboard against Texas, but they really manhandled them in a way that I don't think most people expected. So absolutely arrow pointed up at the right time of the year for Georgia.
Talking about the other team in town before we get to some of the national stories, Georgia Tech has sort of settled Ian into that like 16-17 spot, but do you still see a path for them to rank higher? And also, what are their prospects for the ACC title?
Yeah, they still have a shot. They're still in the mix. Disappointing that, you know, maybe a couple of these games didn't go how they wanted to, especially after that hot start. But a lot of these teams are in that mix where it's just any given Saturday, and sometimes it's not your day. But they've got to focus in. They've got to hone in and get back to unleashing Haynes King. Allow him to be the engine of the offense and give him some timely playmaking, get him a couple turnovers in some of these key games. But now all of a sudden you're going to need a little bit more help. The pathway to get into the playoff is a little bit muddier now. It'll happen. I think they will get back into the top 13, top 12. But I think winning the ACC is going to be, you know, obviously the clear way in. But can the ACC get a second team in case they're not able to win it? That's a tougher conversation. It's just not really been a year where everyone, you know, they're all kind of beating up on each other. And that's tough. The conference doesn't get the same breaks that some of the others do. But I do think they're going to have a pretty good chance to get in. Can they take care of business here in the next couple of weeks if they can reach the championship game? I think even if they, I don't want to say if they lose that they're in, but I think the SEC is cannibalizing itself a little bit. Big Ten's about to cannibalize it a little bit. itself a little bit. So, and it helps that there's not a lot of G5 contenders. It's basically going to be one representative from there. So they have a pretty decent shot, considering how poorly, you know, some of these games have played out over the last, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks.
All right. A&M, did that scare you off a little bit, or was that a blip on the radar?
No, I don't think it's a blip on the radar. And it's just hard. Like, it's hard not to count their history against them. They do feel like a ticking time bomb. Marcel Reed is awesome. He is so fun to watch. He's so explosive. I think if you're Ohio State, I think that's the team that you're going to worry about the most, because they have the athleticism. And same for Georgia. Texas A&M is one of the few teams that has the athleticism all over the field. They've got the playmaking. They've got the big names that they brought in through the portal, at least former big recruits. And I think they have a really good coaching staff, too. What they've been able to do on a weekly basis is it's just a lot different than what we saw under past head coaches that they've had. And so the talent's there. The question is, do you have the quarterback who can consistently do it, or is he too much of an X factor? Is he going to turn the ball over several times? We saw it last week where he should have had a couple more turnovers. Like, there were opportunities for Texas A&M to be buried even more than what they were. Incredible comeback. It's a great bout of resiliency. Obviously, you're happier that they won than if they would have lost. But at the same time, I think that was a real reality check for them to say they are possibly a team that could win out the regular season. And in the first round of the playoff, they drop a dud and they're upset by a team that they probably should have beat by two scores. It's just they seem to be one of those programs that can't really focus in on some of these games, and, you know, whether it's a big game or, you know, a team that you're favored by, they just feel especially prone to dropping one of those games.
Did James Franklin settle by taking the Tech job?
I don't think he did. I don't know where else was too much more attractive. I don't think LSU would have been interested. I know there's a decent amount of openings right now. But I think the book on Franklin, great guy, good recruiter. He's definitely a floor raiser. I don't think he's necessarily a ceiling raiser. And a lot of these jobs are looking for that ceiling raiser. I think Tech is a pretty patient place. They're going to give him time. They're going to let him build. If he can settle in there as an eight, if he can basically make what Virginia Tech was, Penn State was at Virginia Tech, he'll have a lifetime job there. Should he have waited maybe a year? I could see that argument. Maybe he gets a little bit better of a job next year. But at the same time, I think he likes the challenge of building more than he likes the challenge of maybe, I don't want to say competing for a championship, but I think that he did so well at Penn State at building them from the ground up. I think he probably wants to get back to that and maybe lower pressure right away, and then over the next couple of years, see where he can bring that program. So I like the fit. It seems like a downgrade for him, maybe than what we would think. But ultimately, I don't know that the opinion of him was, you know, incredibly high. It's not like he would have walked into, you know, it's like Sark left Texas. I don't think Franklin would have been a candidate there. So I don't really know what else he would have waited for.
Talking all things college ball with our buddy Ian Valentino. Make sure you check him out at A to Z Sports. I can't think of a reason other than hubris why Lane Kiffin is getting involved in all this media scuffle about his future at Ole Miss and potentially leaving for other jobs. But why is he setting himself up to have egg on his face if he does leave? Like, what is the point, again, other than stroking your own ego, to make this much of a fuss about it? Just do what you're going to do.
Yeah, I've been a little bit surprised. I don't know if he's trying to troll other fan bases. I don't think that he is, though. I think he's maybe conflicted, and it seems hard to imagine. I don't really understand why. He's built a really good situation for himself, unless if he knows something that we don't, which is possible, which to me, the big swing would be, you know, can he go back to the NFL or something like that? I don't think that door is ever going to be open, but I don't see it. I don't see the pitch for Florida. I don't see the appeal of Florida. LSU does not seem to be a match there. I think from a program situation, that could be a sell, but I don't think LSU's interested, and I don't think they've put themselves in a position to really sell themselves to him. So I don't know what he's getting at. If it's for a bigger check, well, he's kind of backed himself into a corner with that too, because he said that it's not about the money. So I know how these guys double speak all the time, but you know, he's a guy that I generally take at face value more than most other coaches. He just tends to say what he thinks and seems to follow through on it. So there must be some smoke to that fire. Either he is actually interested in Florida and he's just kind of, you know, playing it out until the string's played out and sees where Ole Miss kind of, you know, settles when the season ends, or he's just playing a long game and wants to mess with Florida a little bit more than what, you know, I would care to. I think it damages the team. We saw it. The team came out sluggish. They came out like they didn't really have their eyes on the prize last week. And I think that's, you know, we saw it several years ago too, when the same rumors were going around. Ole Miss comes out and they laid some duds in the second half of the year. It's very damaging for these kids when they don't know their future. So I think he needs to, you know, just like you said, whatever your intention is, just make it known and commit to it.
All right. So a couple of guys that are out there, like a guy like Jeff Brohm, for instance, are you surprised he's probably, you know, going to take this contract at Louisville and stay there? And because there's guys like that are scattered across the league right now, because in my opinion, Ian, there's no like one guy that sticks out like a sore thumb, especially now that Franklin has signed on with Virginia Tech, that it seems like a logical fit for a lot of these openings. It seems like a lot of the guys that are out there, the job might be too big for them.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of swings. I mean, you're talking about Brian Hartline, offensive coordinator from Ohio State, possibly getting some of these elite jobs or these top-notch jobs, which I'm not saying he's not qualified to get something, but it seems like a big jump. And we talk about, you know, it seems like the James Madison coach talking about, you know, being linked to UCLA. Like, I don't really know why I'd go to UCLA. I don't see a dramatically better candidate than him. Maybe he could get Penn State. Did you fire James Franklin? Did you fire Brian Kelly at the right time? I think you could argue, sure, maybe from where your program sits today, but where's the candidate? Where's the great guy that you can go out and bring in? And you know, there's not like a Marcus Freeman that's just waiting out there that seems like a top-notch promotion candidate or someone that's built something somewhere else and has done it for years or brings a lot of spark to a program. It almost feels like you're getting ready to see some huge jumps in competition, and some of those guys will be the right hire. We'll look back and be like, wow, I can't believe we questioned that. But that uncertainty is surprising to see the numbers that these schools paid for buyouts without a clear plan in mind. It's not like, you know, Lincoln Riley, I think, is a target potentially from USC. I could see LSU going after him. I think that could make some sense. But it's not like his stock is at an all-time high and that it's easy to just justify to your coaching staff. So it's a fascinating time. I think some of these teams may be regretting their decision here in a couple of months when they're looking at this job market and they're like, man, we might have to take some NFL guys or maybe some former college guys that went to the NFL to be coordinators and maybe settle a little bit more than what we thought, because it's just the coaching pipeline is just not one of those years that's you know, super deep with guys with Power 4 and SEC and Big Ten experience.
Before I let you go, what do you make of the committee switching all these names and faces and chairs? Is that healthy for the college football playoff committee?
I think I'll say yes. I'll say yes in the sense of we know how things run. We know kind of the status quo. Maybe it is. Maybe this will be for the better. The game has changed so much that I think maybe having guys on there, men and women on there, that maybe have a fresher look, maybe some fresher ideas. Maybe this is the way that we need to lean into things. As we enter this, you know, we've been in NIL, but we've kind of seen what NIL can do if it's unchecked and all the money that's going around with the TV contracts. So maybe these are the folks that need to be in place to kind of get it back to being less of a business, or at least feeling like less of a business direction. It's going to be more of a business, but maybe feeling less so on Saturdays than maybe what it's starting to trend to. I know a lot of fans are getting turned off by that. So I'm hoping that they can bridge the gap a little bit better and at least make it feel a little bit more traditional from what we're used to.
Ian, great stuff as always. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys.